ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. So we're continuing our reading from the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is chapter 15, text number 3. Dvau, daive, pitri, karye, trin, ekaikam, ubhayatra, va, bhojayat, susamriddho, api, shradhe, kuryan, na, vistaram. Dvaudaive pitrikarye trin, ekaikam ubhayatrava, bhojayet susamidropi, shradhe kuryana vistaram. Dvaudaive pitrikarye trin, ekaikam ubhayatrava, bhojayet susamriddhopi, shradhe kuryana vistaram. Dvaudaive pitrikarye trin, ekaikam ubhayatrava, bhojayet susamriddhopi, shradhe kuryana vistaram. Please chant. Ekaika Ubhayatrava. Vaishnavis? Naive pitrikaye trin. Indropi. Dvaudaive pitrikaye trin. Ekaikam ubhayatrava, bhojayetsu samriddhopi, shradhe kuryana vistaram. Dvaudaive pitrikarye trin, ekaikam ubhayatrava. Okay, so synonyms, dvau, two, daive, during the period when oblations are offered to the demigods, pitrikarye, in the Shraddha ceremony, in which oblations are offered to the forefathers. Three. Eka, one. Ekam, one. Upayatra, for both occasions. Va, either. Pojayat, one should feed. Susamriddha, api, even though one is very rich. Shraddhe, when offering oblations to the forefathers. Kuryat, one should do. Na, not. Vistaram, very expensive arrangements. So, Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. During the period for offering oblations to the demigods, one should invite only two brahmanas. And while offering oblations to the forefathers, one may invite three brahmanas. Or in either case, only one brahmana will suffice. Even though one is very opulent, he should not endeavor to invite more brahmanas or make various expensive arrangements on those occasions. Please repeat. During the period for offering oblations to the demigods, one should invite only two brahmanas. And while offering oblations to the forefathers, one may invite three brahmanas. Or in either case, only one brahmana will suffice. Even though one is very opulent, he should not endeavor to invite more brahmanas or make various expensive arrangements on those occasions. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As we have already mentioned, Srila Advaita Acharya, during the generally observed ceremony to offer oblations to the forefathers, invited only Haridas Thakur. Thus he followed this principle. Name Bhakta Chaturvedi Mad Bhakta Swapracha Priyaha. The Lord says, it is not necessary that one become very expert in Vedic knowledge before he can become my bhakta or devotee. Even if one is born in a family of dog eaters, he can become my devotee and be very dear to me, in spite of having taken birth in such a family. Therefore, offerings should be given to my devotee, and whatever my devotee has offered me should be accepted. Following this principle, one should invite a first-class brahmana or Vaishnava, a realized soul, and feed him while observing the Shraddha ceremony to offer oblations to one's forefathers. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachadeshtarne Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtang Stapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sopadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitangsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripre Panchakopaturubhyasya, Kripasindubhya evacha, Patitanang, Pavadevhyo, Vaishnavevhyo, Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srinivasini Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So, in today's verse, brahmanas are prominent because it's being mentioned that they should be fed on these particular occasions. Although one should not make a very expensive arrangement, just for these two occasions. Not that never make an expensive arrangement, but for observing the Shraddha ceremony, it's mentioned, it doesn't need to be an elaborate expensive arrangement. So how does one recognize a brahmana? How do you recognize who is a brahmana? Otherwise, if you say, I'm going to feed Brahmanas, hey, anybody could show up and say, feed me. So, how do we recognize a Brahmana? By what? By the symptoms, yes. We know that, unfortunately, the shadow of Vedic culture became the standard, and people started nominating themselves as Brahmanas or being considered Brahmanas just by birth. I'm born in a Brahmin family, therefore I am a Brahmana. But that's not necessarily the fact. The simple example that Prabhupada would use all the time is that of a high court judge. If your father is a high court judge, does that mean that you are a high court judge? No, you have to qualify yourself. You have to go to school all the way to college. You have to get degrees. You have to then get the experience. Then you have to be nominated and accepted. So one should not falsely present oneself as being something. Prabhupada also told a humorous story in this regard about people, again, being always ready to present themselves, especially when food is involved. That there was this kingdom, and the king noticed that his subjects were becoming extremely lazy, which is understandable, but it's Kali Yuga. And one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is that everyone is lazy by nature. So the king called the ministers and said, what to do? How to motivate these people to stop being so lazy? So the minister came up with a very nice plan. He said, let's build a huge Spandal city. We'll invite everybody in the kingdom to come and eat, only if they consider themselves to be lazy. So the king said, then what good is that going to do? Everybody's going to show up. He said, yes, but then we have a plan. So they did that. Sent out the announcement, all lazy men, please come to the special festival for lazy fellows, and we will feed you sumptuously, as much as you can eat. Invitation went out, everybody showed up. All place packed. Everybody sat down in rows nicely, and then they started feeding everybody, and they were eating to their heart's content. Sabji, puri, everything was there. So then the plan was, after everybody was seated under all these giant pandals, they set them on fire. And set the pandals on fire, and everybody jumped up and ran away except for two fellows. Two guys. And one said to the other, you know, it's getting hot in here. And the other guy said, yes, but this food is so nice. I can't, how can I leave this? It's so nice. So then the king understood the plan. He said, yes, those are two lazy fellows. We'll feed them. The rest of you, you have to work. And they put them all to work. So you have to know who you are. And how do you know? By the symptoms. These guys were so lazy that even when their life was in danger, they wouldn't run away. So a Brahmana is one person, is a person who, even if his life is in danger, he will not give up the Brahminical principles. That's a Brahmana. Not that there's some threat to my existence and therefore, I'll be something else. No, a Brahmana, for instance, is not supposed to accept service from anyone under any circumstance. The Brahmana's business is patan patan yajanyana dana pratigraha. He has to become learned by studying the Vedas under another Brahmana, not independently. Not that, you know, I've studied independently and now I know. No, that's not a Brahmana. Brahmana means he learned from someone else. He's learned from someone who already knows his knowledge. Just like we always speak about the cyclic succession. It's a cyclic succession of knowledge, primarily how to behave. Because one may say, why do we need all these technical understandings here? You should only feed two Brahmanas on this occasion, three on that occasion. Why such technical knowledge? Why is that required? Yes, what this is indicating is that the Vedic culture means that one should be willing to be told what to do, not figure it out on my own. That is not Vedic culture. That is not real spiritual culture. In real spiritual culture, you're told what to do at every moment. And a Brahmana who's one who every moment he can look at his watch and he knows exactly what to do right now. It's noon, I have to chant Gayatri, first take a bath, then chant my Gayatri, and then I have to do this and do that. Every moment of the day, a Brahmana knows what to do because he's been taught what to do. And he's learned from somebody who already knows, not by figuring it out. So this is a symptom of a Brahmana. He has to be learned, having learned from someone else. Then he has to be willing to teach. Not that I learn and then whatever I learn, I hoard to myself and then I make some seminars online and then, you know, and I charge $15 a head. No, that's not a Brahmana. Brahmana learns and wants to teach freely what he has learned. It's a little difficult today to have that mentality because nobody's trained how to properly compensate a Brahmana. The Brahmanas are allowed to dine a particular head. They're allowed to collect charity because they're giving freely their knowledge. But nowadays, everybody will willingly and gladly take your knowledge and give you squat. They don't want to give anything. They're not properly trained. So it's a little bit difficult to be a true Brahmana in Kali Yuga. But still, so in our society, Prabhupada said, yes, we freely give knowledge here. We don't charge anybody for coming to Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class. But he said, when you're invited out to speak, you should get some remuneration, he said. Otherwise, they'll take you cheaply. Especially here in America, it's not the culture anymore. They don't freely give. I'm shocked when somebody offers something when we go out to speak in colleges, high schools, and teacher says, here, please take this, you know, for your gas money, whatever. That's shocking because in the most part, they don't do that. I even asked one college teacher once. We've been going, you know, semester after semester. So I asked her, you know, isn't it customary that, you know, if you invite somebody to speak in your class, you give some remuneration, something, offer something? She got very upset. Very upset. She got very mad. She said, no, I don't have any money, and the school doesn't give me any money to give anybody. And she got very upset. So she still invites us, but I never brought it up again after that. But so in our Western culture, especially I should say American culture, because I've traveled in Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Scandinavia, and in those countries, it's still kind of the custom. If they invite you to speak at a program, they muster up some kind of offering. But in Russia, I've traveled all throughout Russia, and that's the standard there. If you're invited to speak somewhere, they come up with some offering to give you. But here in America, for some reason, I guess they feel that everybody here is independently wealthy, so they don't have to. But it's not just a question of wealth or not. It's a culture that the brahmanas, those who are giving knowledge, should be offered some compensation. Not necessarily monetary. In the Vedic times, they were offered practical. Like Nanda Maharaj, whenever he had some festival, he would invite learned brahmanas, and he would compensate them primarily by giving them cows. He was a Vaishya. He was maintaining 900,000 cows, it's stated in the Bhagavatam. And so he would give cows. And not just cows, but nicely decorated cows. It goes to show you that 5,000 years ago, during Nanda Maharaj's time, gold was plentiful. And to have gold, it means you have to have goldsmiths, those who mine the gold, those who process the gold, and then those who shape the gold into ornaments. And so all the cows were nice. Their hooves were gold-plated. Their horns were gold-plated. They were wearing nice silken garments. So everybody was nicely employed. Those who knew how to work a gold, they had constant employment because they had to come up with all these golden ornaments and dress for the cows and stuff. And but just see how gold wasn't taken as something so, extremely valuable. They were nowadays it's selling for such a high price. But in those days, they had so much gold, and you could decorate a cow with the gold. And give a brahmana, 100 cows decorated with gold. Nowadays, we couldn't dream of that. Even just to maintain one cow is a big deal. What to speak of giving her away with gold-plated horns and hooves. And you shudder to even think of the expense. And that's why in this day and age, elaborate sacrifice, is not the way for making progress. There's still a class of men in India that try to do this. They say the way to make spiritual progress is to perform these yajnas. So they have set up all these yoga pits, and they sit around and they light fires. But it's the shadow of what it's supposed to be. Real yoga means tons of grains, tons of ghee, learned brahmanas who can recite the mantras precisely. Because we know from so many stories in the Bhagavatam, if you mispronounce even one word, you're not going to get the right result. Instead of creating a demon that can kill Indra, you create a demon that will be killed by Indra. Just by one slight mispronunciation. That's what happened in the case of Vritrasura. They performed this huge yajna to create a demon that would kill Indra as revenge. But because they mispronounced one word, they created a demon who was killed by Indra. So very, very important. The Brahmanas had to precisely pronounce the Sanskrit. You had to have so much grain and ghee. And then you had to give in charity to the Brahmanas after the sacrifice was over, not just thank you very much and see you next time. No, you had to compensate them nicely with so many cows and so much gold. And the Brahmanas, though, they were so satisfied, they would immediately give it away or throw it away. As in the case, that Arjuna is called Dhananjaya, which means the conqueror of wealth. And Prabhupada told that story. that he got that name because, you know, before the Rajasuya Yajna, the Pandavas, they needed lots and lots of money to put on this elaborate sacrifice. And so where to get money? So they Arjuna approached Krishna. Krishna told him, yeah, I can tell you where to get money. He said, formerly, many, many ages ago, there was one king who was performing so many big sacrifices, and he would compensate the brahmanas with golden ornaments and gold plates and all that. It got to the point where the brahmanas, they didn't know what to do with all that gold, so they started throwing it away. And it all piled up in one big hill. But over time, it became covered over with, you know, earth and whatnot. So he said, you go there, and you can collect all that gold. So that's how the brahmanas were. They weren't like hoarding and, you know, like that. No. They would just either give it away or throw it away. They were not fazed by all this wealth, all this gold and stuff. So we've been hearing so much now about the Shraddha ceremony, and it made me wonder, after Prabhupada came to the West, we know, but before he came, he performed, for instance, the death ceremony of his father, etc., etc. But after he came to the West, did he ever perform the Shraddha ceremony even one time? Any of the older devotees especially remember? I can't think of even one time that Prabhupada ever said, now I'm going to perform Shraddha for my departed father. So I was wondering, well, why is that? Because it's mentioned here that's one of the things that should be done. It's part of the one of the sangskaras that has to be performed. And the only thing I can think of is that Prabhupada being in a renounced order, being a sannyasi, probably that obligation was no longer there. Because taking sannyas means social death. It means you give up all social responsibility for family and all that kind of stuff. Technically, even sannyasis are not supposed to pay any tax on anything they collect, any donations that are given to them. That's the Vedic culture. And then I also thought that, yeah, I think that's probably the right answer, because when you think of the life of Lord Chaitanya also, when he was a householder, he went to Gaya to perform the Shraddha ceremony of his father. And that's where he met his guru. But after that, when he took sannyas, I don't recall him ever doing it again. Does anybody, any Chaitanya Charitamrita scholars? Oh, he performed the death ceremony of Haridas Thakur, yes. But on an annual basis, he was not performing the Shraddha ceremony for his father, as far as I can see from the CC. Like I said, before he became a sannyas, he did that. He traveled all the way to Gaya to perform it properly. But after he took sannyas, I don't recall him ever doing that again, performing Shraddha for his father. So it seems, again, that the sannyasis, because they've committed social suicide, they have no obligation to perform these type of ceremonies anymore. But those who are in the householder ashram are supposed to do that. They're supposed to perform the Shraddha ceremony. And therefore, some technical information is being given here. This chapter is dealing with civilized human beings, how to recognize a civilized human being. So human beings in general, the word man comes from the Sanskrit word manusha, which comes from Manu. Manu is the demigod, the personality who is given the law book by which human beings are supposed to live. Civilized human beings are supposed to live by the laws given in the Manu Sanghita. So, and it's very, very, again, a very, very strict guidelines there about how to live as a human being. And Kali Yuga people don't even know of such a book, Manu Samhita, what to speak of following the continents. But things have been very, very much simplified for us. It's not possible for us to go through Manu Samhita and learn all the things that we should do and not do. But it's been very, very much simplified. Lord Chaitanya has said, simply take to the Sankirtan movement, which means avoid four sinful activities and engage wholeheartedly in Krishna conscious activities, beginning with Shravanam Kirtanam. By hearing about Krishna constantly and chanting about Krishna, the Lord becomes pleased. Practically, it's the only way to conquer him. As we know, his name is Ajita. He cannot be conquered by anyone. You cannot come up with any plan or scheme by which you can conquer Krishna. But if you agree to hear about Krishna, this is Lord Brahma's recommendation. After the Brahma Vimohana Leela, when he stole away Krishna's coward boys and cows, and then he was bewildered because he came back and he saw them all there again. So at the end, he offered prayers, and in that prayer, very, very nice verse that Prabhupada quoted many times, Jnane prayasam udapasya demanta eva Jivanti sadmakartam bhavadevartam. Stane stita kshutikatam tanavan manobhir. Say payaso jita jito pyasitai srilokyam. So it says there that the first thing is jnane prayasam unapasin. Don't speculate. Don't speculate. Out of defiance we speculate, and also out of laziness, rather than taking the time to find out from an authorized source what we want to know, we rather sit down and speculate. Well, in my opinion, it's like this, maybe it's like that. What do you think? No. Anything that's important, one has to learn from somebody who already knows. Even the simple things in your life, think about it. The example I like to use is tying your shoelaces. Did anybody here figure it out as a kid, or did somebody show you how to tie your shoelace? So practically anything that's of any importance in your life, somebody taught you. But somehow or other we get to a point, we graduate to a point where we think now we can start figuring it out. No, that's not the way. If the thing is really important and if you really want to know, find somebody who already knows and learn from them. Especially in the devotional line. I've stressed this many, many years. I'm stressing this because I still see that people, when it comes to devotional service, neophyte devotees, they want to try to figure it out. But nobody with any brains wants to go on the altar and try to figure out how to bathe the deities and how to dress. No. Go and find somebody who already knows and ask them how to do it. And that goes for everything from cooking. We heard recently somebody was saying how, oh, that was Shrutakirti, was saying how while he was here with Prabhupada in New Dwarka, one day somebody came up with this new daily sweet that they had figured out. And Prabhupada was very upset. Very upset. He said, I've given you so many standard sweets. Rasgulla, Sandesh, Burfi. So why do you have to go and speculate how to make a sweet? Well, learn how to do it. But the reason why we like to speculate is because we want to be glorified. If I come up with something new and people like it, then they will glorify me. If I simply learn a recipe from Yamuna's cookbook, then who's going to glorify me? It's Yamuna's recipe. But no, it wasn't Yamuna's recipe. She learned also. She went with Prabhupada to India and learned the proper way to make all of these dishes. And that's why she was qualified to write Lord Krishna's Cuisine, that book. So it's not that, you know, you're simply following Yamuna. No, Yamuna also learned from somebody else. And this is the way it goes back into antiquity. Anything that's important, somebody passed it on to somebody else, and we should keep passing it on. As it is. As it is. Daily sweet as it is. Not daily sweet as I speculate it to be. Now at home, yes, you can make whatever you want. But when it comes to serving the deity, there's a parampara, there's a tradition that's been going on. Just plug yourself into that tradition. Prabhupada said, when you cook for Krishna in the temple, you cook what Krishna wants, not what you want. At home, you're allowed to cook what you want and offer it. That's the difference between home offering and temple offering. In a temple, you're supposed to cook what Krishna wants, which means what's been coming down traditionally. Bhaktivinoda Thakura sung, you know, that song, Bhoga Arti. And he sings in that song, there are a couple of stanzas that completely just describes all the things that are offered to Krishna. Luchi, Chini, Sarapuri, Ladu, Rasabari. All of these things that have been offered traditionally. So that's what we learn to make, the traditional dishes that have been offered to Krishna. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're in a place where you can't get certain ingredients that you have to make something back. No. By time, place, and circumstance, one has to be intelligent. But if the ingredients are there to make the standard offerings of rice, dal, chapati, you know, rasgulla, burfi, if all these ingredients are there, then why speculate? Make that. That's what's traditionally been offered to Krishna. And if it doesn't fit your diet, I'm sorry. You're allowed to go home and make something that fits your diet. That's all right. And then offer it to Krishna. But in the temple, we shouldn't think that because I want to be a vegan, then Krishna should be offered vegan preparations. Because I only want to eat salad this week, then Krishna should only eat salad. No, not like that. Offer Krishna the standard foodstuffs that have always been offered to him. And then one last point I wanted to touch on was that here's mentioned, again, Prabhupada mentioned how Advaita Acharya offered his Shraddha offering to Haridas Thakur. So why is it so important? If we know who Advaita Acharya is, then realize why it's important to keep mentioning that. In the sixth chapter of the Adilila of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it glorifies Advaita Acharya, who he is. And it begins by saying that there are two features of the material energy. There's the efficient cause and the material cause. So the efficient cause is Mahavishnu, And then in a particular feature of Mahavishnu known as Advaita, that is the material cause. So that same Advaita descends to this world as Advaita Acharya. So Mahavishnu, Purusha Avatar, we're dealing with God, essentially, an expansion of God. So whatever he does is perfect. No mistake there. So it's not that, you know, like sometimes people just, again, just to show off or out of some whim, they'll do something non-traditional. At the time when he appeared, the tradition, there was a very traditional Hindu society. So he wasn't doing something non-traditional just to be different. Today I feel like being different rather than bringing in a regular Brahmin, I'll bring in this Muslim person and feed him. No. He wasn't doing something just to shake up the, you know, no. He was showing that this person, Haridas Thakur, is worshipable. Why? Because in spite of the fact that he took birth in a Muslim family, in spite of the fact that he was not a Hindu, because he has totally become a devotee of Krishna, not just a regular devotee of Krishna, a pure devotee of Krishna, simply chanting the holy name, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Day and night, that's all he would do, Haridas Thakur. Stop just long enough to take a little prasadam and maybe take a little bit of rest and then back to chanting all day long. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Rama. Even if he was chanting 5 minutes around, which is pretty fast. Pretty fast. 5 minutes around is pretty fast. Even if he was doing that, it would take practically the whole day to finish 192 rounds. So he was that so serious. So Advaita Acharya was showing to the smarter brahmanas of the time that yes, you may know so many rituals. Lighting fires this way, throwing water that way, and chanting so many mantras. But if you're not a pure devotee of the Lord, then you're not as important as somebody who's not a traditional brahmana, but by dint of his devotional service, he's become more than a brahmana. That was the whole point. And because it's Advaita Acharya, he's come to teach us. That's why he's known as Advaita Acharya. He's come to teach. So we should take that to heart. That we don't see the external when it comes to devotional service. It's not that here's an American Vaishnava, and here's an Indian Vaishnava, and here's a South American Vaishnava. That is immediately aparad. That is immediately aparad. Arche Vishnu Shiladi, Guru Narmati, Vaishnava Jati Budhi. There's that verse that says that. That one who sees the deity as being made of stone, who sees the guru as an ordinary person, and who sees a Vaishnava in terms of his jati, his birth, immediately, hellish person, hellish mentality. So a Vaishnava is a Vaishnava is a Vaishnava. It doesn't matter which section of society they come from, which country they come from. If a person has become a Vaishnava, a devotee of the Lord, then all other considerations go out the window. It's not that we, you know, we give more stress to the handsome and beautiful Vaishnavas and those who are not so good looking, stay to the back. No. Or color of the skin, or sex, or whatever. It doesn't matter. If a person is a Vaishnava, they're a Vaishnava, and they're treated as such. It doesn't matter. And therefore we see in the nectar of instruction also, Upadeshamrita, it says that it's offensive to see a Vaishnava as having some problem with his body. It says, just like the Ganges, even if it's full of bubbles, foam, and mud, it is still a sacred river. Similarly, a Vaishnava, even if the Vaishnava has something wrong with his body, some deformity or some problem, still a Vaishnava. You have to see like that. Otherwise, you run into trouble. You run the risk of committing Vaishnava aparad. So, a few points from today's verse. Any questions, comments? Yes. Kumi. Hare Krishna.
Do you think that if Prabhupada was around today and he saw cows being picked up by metal tractors and beat violently by their caretakers, that he would still support that industry?
I think he would still buy milk, yes. Obviously, it's best if we have devotee farms and we're getting some ahimsa milk here in the temple. It's extremely expensive. But the point is that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and he sees that if this cow... First of all, I'd like to say, you cannot get milk from a dead cow. So if you have milk, it came from a live cow. And that cow that gave that milk, if that milk is used in Christian service, she will be benefited. If she dies and her milk is never used in the Lord's service, she doesn't get any benefit at all. So yes, it's best if we can get milk from devotee farms, but in the absence of that, we have to maintain certain traditions. And milk is such a wonderful food that even when it's hellishly obtained, like they do nowadays with these hellish machinery and stuff, still it's such a powerful food that one's brain will still benefit better than not having any milk at all. So yes, we don't overlook the horrors of the dairy industry. But I also like to point out that even if you're a vegan, some percentage of every vegan dollar that you spend goes to maintain some horrible aspect of the society. You can't get away from that. If you go to Trader Joe's and buy your quinoa, a part of that dollar that you've spent at Trader Joe's is maintaining their meat department, and it's also maintaining the meat industry, and it's all, you know. And even if you go to a store where they don't sell any meat products at all, it's all just vegan products and nothing meat. Still, a portion of that dollar is going somewhere to support some hellish activity. The oil industry, somebody who works in a store who is not a vegan, but they just work in a vegan store and they take that dollar and they go buy a hamburger. It's something. You cannot get away with it. Kali Yuga means it's a contaminated age. It's hard to find any pure person or pure situation. So in the absence of 100% devotee-raised and devotee-obtained milk, I think Prabhupada would still get milk and use it in the service of the deity. That's my personal opinion. Good question, though. Anything else?
You know, now,
yeah, and there's so many reasons. We could have a hour-long discussion or more on just that one point. But on the one hand, did you want to say something, Jyoti Karma? Give him the microphone, please. Yeah. And Krishna blessed him to keep going. Jyoti Karma was mentioning that he just came back from Hungary. This is for the internet. And they have a very nice farm there, and they're protecting cows, and the milk is being used in a temple in Budapest. But, you know, here in America, we had very successful dairy farms at one point. Gitanagari was famous even amongst the non-devotees. They would come there just to see how the devotees were raising such a wonderful herd of cows that were giving milk production that was off the scale. It was like record. Prabhupada mentioned many times how he was proud. The devotees were taking care of the cows so nicely. They were producing so much milk that it was breaking state records and stuff like that in Pennsylvania. But gradually over time, it fell apart. So this is Kali Yuga. It's very difficult to maintain anything, even with the best of intentions. It's very difficult to maintain anything nicely. So, but yes, considering that this movement is only 40-something years old, you know, it's not surprising that we've had our ups and downs, but this is a long haul. We're trying to set up something that's supposed to be running for 10,000 years minimum. So I think gradually with time, after the next generation especially, these things will fall in place. But that doesn't mean that in the meantime, we should, because I personally have noticed, I've had experience that a lot of people will turn to veganism. It's not just about because the cows are not protected. They have some mistaken idea that, you know, man should never take anything from man. But no, this particular relationship of human beings to cows is set up by Krishna. Krishna's planet is called Goloka, the planet of the cows. And if you don't like cows and you don't think you should take anything from the cow, then you're not going to be happy in Goloka. And Krishna, when he comes here, when he sets up Gokula is Goloka manifest on earth, so we can see what happens in the spiritual world. And he was born in a Kshatriya family, but he made it a point to go to the countryside and maintain cows and take, what was he stealing? Butter, milk. So anybody who shudders to the sound of butter, milk, yogurt, they're not going to be happy in Krishna's company. Because he'll happily steal butter and give it to you. Steal yogurt and give it to you. It's so important. But no, we think, we shouldn't take from the animals. The cow's milk is for the calf. No, the cow produces way more milk than the calf needs, and that excess milk is meant for human consumption. The vegans don't want to hear that. I've been at festivals where, you know, I was at one in particular in San Diego many years ago where a whole contingent of vegans descended on us. And in a very angry military mood, they wanted to convince the Hare Krishnas that you should not take anything from animals. No cows, no honey, no nothing. Veganism over all, you know, and they were... And some devotees, as you know, they like to argue and fight. So it was becoming very heated until Jai Dvaita Maharaj came in and told the devotees, calm now, go back to your tables. You'll never convince these people. They're just here to fight. They don't really want to have, you know, philosophical exchange. Yes. So
yeah, I just want to say that when Prabhupada talks about milk, he never says about having just a stout, strong body, but he says for finer brain tissue to understand spiritual consciousness.
Yeah.
So that was really his major point on that.
Jai. Antaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.